Janae Angola Jr., the podcast.
Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson. In about a half hour, we'll talk to Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick, who's going to give us some time to really talk about everything. One of the most important, influential voices in college football as big decisions around realignment, the college football playoff expansion, and the execution of the 2021 season come into focus. And we'll do that. We'll get back into our usual bout of Cam Newton-related shenanigans around here because we got quotas to fill. But Amber, a new challenger has entered the ring here. I'm very excited for this one because whenever we get Philly sports in the news, we get our staff riled up around here. And our producer, Cliff, before this show, I thought we were going to have to use the dump button in the studio when we weren't on air. This man was fired up here. And Amber, you have not, I believe, been with us yet when we've played Good John, Bad John. So I'm excited for you to see this.
I'm excited, too. A little scared of Cliff, mostly, but excited.
I think everyone's always a little scared when we're dealing with Philadelphia fans here. So are we going to fire the open here? Are we going to do this for real? Maybe.
Hold up, hold up. I'm getting word from the TV side that we have some type of sounder going on here. Let me see it. So there's a little graphic for it. And let me play the sound. The proper sound.
All right, there we go. So this is Good John, Bad John. For anyone unfamiliar with the Philadelphia vernacular, it can basically mean anything except for a guy. But we won't get into that because it seems mildly problematic. Anyway, Good John, Bad John here on ESPN Radio. We let Cliff and really our Philadelphia contingent around here at ESPN Radio weigh in on this. And this one's a doozy today because Joel Embiid finally got in on the action after a USA Today report said that a rift between Embiid and Simmons had been escalating and that the 76ers preferred Embiid. Joel came out and said, "I haven't forgotten, but 2 years ago, I got booed. People in Philly wanted me to be traded. I even shushed them. Only the real ones didn't, but I just kept putting in the work that offseason to be better because I knew I wasn't playing up to my potential. Philly fans, y'all got to be better. For clarity, I love criticism, and I love when I'm told I can't do something. It makes me work harder to prove everyone wrong." He went on to say, "Stop using my name in people's agendas," said he loves playing with Ben Simmons, and he hopes that the team is back because he believes they're good enough to win. So, Cliff, all of that, Good John, Bad John.
This is an absolutely tremendously bad John. Listen, Joel Embiid has every right to say, "Stop using my name for stories for your fodder," but here's the thing. This man, Ben Simmons, hasn't gotten any better since we drafted him. Number one overall in 2016, and now he wants to complain and say, "I want out of Philly," after we showed him love for the last 5 years and he hasn't improved on anything? How is this our fault? How can you spin this on us? What did we do? Now it's our fault because you don't want to get better. You don't want to improve. We keep getting bounced out of the second round every single year, even though we're supposed to trust the process for the last 7 years. And it's the fans' fault? Come on, bro. You can't do that anymore.
I will say, Amber, Cliff is right in the fact that he and other Philly fans have been defending Ben Simmons as myself and other members of the, you know, big bad national media have come and say, "Man, you guys could probably do better at this spot here." Where are you at on Joel Embiid blaming the fans in this case, though?
Well, Joel Embiid, if he had a real issue with the fans in Philly, then don't take the bag, man. But you just took $196 million to stay there for the next 6 years. So I don't really know what he's doing here blaming the fans. Now, he's saying they were even hard on me. But then he also said back when I wasn't playing up to my potential. So were they unfairly hard on you or were you not playing up to your potential and you're playing in Philadelphia? And we do know that that is a special kind of fan base, to put it lightly. You do have to know the market you play in. I think you have to be aware of that, particularly if you are going to sign the max extension and stay in that market. I don't know if that then gives you the right to go after the fans in any regard. But in terms of Ben Simmons, what this feels like here is the typical, and I think we see this in the NBA often, where there is drama because the NBA, it's like a male soap opera, which is what I love about it. But there's the drama. You know, we get the subtweeting in the NBA. There's lots of smoke. And typically, of course, we know when there's lots of smoke, there's fire. And there's been a lot of smoke inside that 76ers locker room. For years, we've been hearing these rumors about the rift between Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. I mean, I remember, because I'm a Miami Heat fan, I remember when Jimmy Butler was there, and Jimmy Butler was reportedly best friends with Joel Embiid, and they didn't really vibe with Ben Simmons because he didn't have the work ethic that Jimmy Butler respects, and all those rumors that have been circulating forever. And now Joel Embiid is playing the whole, oh, it's not us, it's you. Like, y'all are making all that up. And I feel like this is the move in the NBA now, where they have the drama and then they put it back on the media and the fans and act like we're all making it up after all these years.
On top of that, he said himself, the fans made me play harder because they pushed me, because I wasn't playing up to my potential. This is exactly what we have with Ben Simmons not playing up to his potential. What, like, he
Cliff's taking credit now for Joel Embiid.
Joel Embiid playing
at an MVP caliber for the first half of the season.
Should take credit because he gave thanks to the fans for pushing him to be a better player, and he almost won the MVP had he played 10 more games. Yes,
I was
or no?
on your side, like, right up until that point.
Yeah, really?
You just, like, you went too Philly on me. You know?
I'm going to give you time to reinsert your shoulder because I think you popped it out patting yourself on the back.
No, I didn't pop it out. I'm just speaking facts here. Y'all know that.
Well, all right, so this is what I'd say, because Chinnan Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Looking at this from Joel Embiid, I appreciate it, actually, Amber, that he did this from the position of power. Because it's easy to do this when you're Ben Simmons and be salty with the fans and come out and say this. But Joel's on the other side of this now. Joel's got the money. He has got the love of the crowd. Like the win your crowd thing from Gladiator. Joel Embiid went out there and did that. If it wasn't the MVP caliber season, it was the playoff run where he played in a torn meniscus and was still giving dudes 40. Like, all of that tremendously endearing to a Philly crowd that, you know, I know pretty well. Family got a pretty good acquainted relationship with the Philadelphia fan base. But for him to say that now is a nice reminder. Athletes got long memories, man. Like, that slight can go there. And Amber, you take the bag because you think you got a team that works well. You think that you've got money that you want to have in your bank account here. But it's always like a nice reminder that the fan relationship is a subjective one. Fans cheer when players do well. Players also are only going to remember the things that serve them. And Joel Embiid very clearly remembers, you guys always didn't love me like that, and so why am I ever going to support you all unconditionally? It's not going to happen.
Because you have 196 million reasons to do it. I mean, well over 200 million
reasons.
That
doesn't mean I
have
to like
any of y'all. It just feels like things have gone pretty well for you in Philadelphia, Joel. Like, that's what it feels like to me. And so maybe, I understand that that is a special kind of place, and you said that the fans cheer you. In Philadelphia, the fans also boo you, and you and I have discussed at length with everything that's gone on with the Mets, we are not those kinds of fans, and that is not fan behavior that I would ever have in my repertoire. Nevertheless, that is Philly, and for better or for worse, that's what you're going to get in Philly. And I feel like you need to have the short memory if you're going to stay in the market, because it was up to Joel Embiid. He's that good, and we have seen guys in the NBA choose to go elsewhere. But in regards to Ben Simmons, like, you're right, he's kind of coming from a position of power here, but he's also doing it when he knows that he's untouchable because he's solidified there in Philly through 2027. And by the way, Ben Simmons ain't. Like, he's on the way out. And so now it feels like Joel Embiid wants to come out and be like, oh, you know, there's no rift here. Me and Ben Simmons are cool, when you know that that guy is refusing to even show up.
Well, that's kind of why I love this. This is an effective hobby bias from Joel Embiid. Because he's done the thing. He's won at a high level. He can say whatever he wants. Javi Baez's point was, if you don't love us all the time, we're not going to love you all the time. And Joel Embiid's basically saying, no. If I'm keeping it a buck with you guys, I remember. I know you weren't with me wholly and truly this entire time. Not saying it's got to work that way, but when you've accomplished to his level, Cliff, that's a two-way street.
Oh, but we weren't with him the whole time because he wasn't living up to his potential. That's why.
Well, and winning at a high level is overstating it, let's be honest. Like, that 76ers team has underperformed.
No, but Joel Embiid himself has not.
Joel Embiid has been a stud. Like, now look at just
the past. Fair, but not Ben Simmons.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what we're talking about.
Exactly. Now look at just the past year, how much love Embiid got for improving his game. If Ben Simmons stepped his game up a little bit more, how much more love would he get, too? They just had the first overall seed in the Eastern Conference and blew out in the second round to an underdog Hawks team and let Kevin Huerter score 30 on them. Come on. That's unacceptable.
Red Velvet, baby.
Four games without shooting a shot in the fourth quarter. Four.
Never knew I'd be out here on the side of the Philly fan.
I tell you, it is amazing.
Never knew.
Life comes at you awfully fast around here when you play Good John, Bad John on ESPN Radio. And I'm sure we'll get into plenty more of this right now because, as Amber pointed out, this is a very like general hospital feel to it, which means we get episodes every day, baby, every day. But coming up next, speaking of an episode we get every day, let's find a landing spot for a now recently evicted NFL quarterback next on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. With more than 30 unique coverage options available, Progressive knows small business. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson. In 10 minutes, we'll talk to Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick. But in the meantime, we will find a home for Cam Newton. Because, Amber, we know Cam got released by the Patriots yesterday. And so we've been trying to figure out, because I think this has been the question with Cam that's been hard to answer, is what is he now? In the context of New England and what they had amassed this offseason, we felt like we had one answer. But when you look out now in the NFL landscape, Amber, at what's left over here, what do you think Cam Newton can actually be at this stage in his career?
I think, well, if he wanted to go to the Houston Texans, maybe he can be a starting quarterback. But if that's Cam's only concern, then maybe he doesn't care what team he has around him. I think at this point in his career, though, the more viable option would be to go to one of these teams that he'll start as a backup on week one, but that he feels like he could win the job. You know, is Cam Newton, can Cam Newton end up winning a job over a Teddy Bridgewater type deal? And I think that's what we could talk about around the entire league. I mean, I think there's still even room maybe in Philly, even after bringing in Gardner Minshew. You know, does Jalen Hurts end up being the answer there? Would you have a Cam Newton? Or we heard Tannenbaum say earlier, maybe New Orleans is an option. You know, does he fit in there well with Jameis as a backup and then maybe eventually beat out Jameis? Or even in Atlanta when we talked about it yesterday, because I don't know if Matt Ryan is going to be there forever. Obviously, Matt Ryan would be the starting quarterback, but they have a real problem behind Matt Ryan where they're relying on now Felipe Franks. Can Cam Newton be better than Franks and be on a good team there, even if he is a backup? All of those teams I just mentioned, absent the Texans, might be good teams and a good spot for Cam to try to work his way back into a starting role. If I was Cam, I would be most focused on a good fit and not necessarily starting day one.
Do you think he can still be the quarterback? Like, we asked Mike this too. Can he be the quarterback on a Super Bowl winning team? I know we've seen, I mean, going back to the Eagles, I'll never forget that 2017 postseason where for a minute we had that hot take theory that maybe you don't need a franchise quarterback to win a Super Bowl because we had about three backups in conference championship weekend. But Amber, it still feels like history shown otherwise on that. Can he be that guy anymore?
Can Joe Flacco be the MVP of a Super Bowl? You know, I mean, what are we talking
about? Well, I do think we play different football than that now, though, Amber, right? The way the league has changed, no?
Yes. But I would say that I think what we've seen, and the reason that I reference a Flacco there, and obviously there are examples of this throughout NFL history, what we have seen is that if you have a good team around the quarterback, sometimes it can be so good that that matters more. You know, if Cam Newton is in a Jimmy Garoppolo-like situation with the 49ers, can they be good enough to make it to a Super Bowl? I think he would just have to show competency. Now, based on his play last year with the Patriots, I don't even know if he can necessarily produce that. But based on this preseason, I was impressed with Cam. I agreed with Tannenbaum. I felt like he's another season removed from that shoulder surgery and like he's looking not MVP Cam form, but looking certainly competent. So if you have the right team around him, could he find his way into a conference championship game or find his way into a Super Bowl? Fine. I think a lot of quarterbacks, frankly, could find their way into that. He's not going to be the reason, though. I mean, that's a whole different conversation. Like, I don't think that he is at the point anymore at 32 years old where he could be the reason that a team makes it to the Super Bowl.
So, on a scale of, man, I guess you could put Joe Flacco to Peyton Manning in Denver. What are we talking about then with that? Like, is it dragged kicking and screaming? Is it just a... Because, Amber, I look at this and we see some of the names out there. Denver is a team that I actually think Cam could perform really well on, given what he's been able to put up. Washington, where he knows Ron Rivera, where he knows Scott Turner, the offensive coordinator from his time in Carolina, is a spot where he can probably be the steady heartbeat as opposed to the heart attack ride that is Ryan Fitzpatrick. I look at all those spots and see potential. I also don't see Super Bowl caliber teams there. But again, those were spots where if you're in Denver and you drafted Justin Fields, or if Washington had hit on Dwayne Haskins and he had been the guy, we're elevating those places in a way Cam Newton's not going to anymore.
I think that when we're talking about where Cam ends up, there's a difference between the teams that you just mentioned in Washington and in Denver, who still have quarterback questions, even if they have named their starting quarterback. And like you said, with Ryan Fitzpatrick, can Cam Newton be better than Fitzpatrick? I mean, I know he can be better than Fitztragic, which you're going to get some Fitztragic and going to get some Fitzmagic with Ryan Fitzpatrick. And of course, Cam, like you said, has those relationships. Denver's another team that even though they name their starting quarterback, I don't know if that is a really solidified starting role. And could Cam win his way into that role on a team that might end up being a pretty decent team if they had somebody competent under center? I think that's a different conversation than when we hear these other teams thrown into the conversation, like a Seattle, I've heard, or even Baltimore or the Cowboys before Will Greer. Like, those jobs, you know, are never going to be Cam. Like, he would just be a backup then, absent injuries. And I don't think that's the move for him. And obviously, some of this is going to be on what Cam wants to do.
Yeah, that's going to be a big part of this. And I have a feeling we'll figure that out in short order here. At Mike Golic Jr., at Amber W790 on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed is where you can weigh in. Coming up next, though, as we get up towards college football's 2021 season, what does the future look like for one of the premier brands in the sport, and how much should we still be betting on college football playoff expansion? We'll talk to Notre Dame AD Jack Swarbrick next after this word from DraftKings. Now, football's almost here. And there is no better place to get in on the action than with DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. As the season is quickly approaching, DraftKings is your one-stop shop to make it rain all season long. To bring you even closer to the action, DraftKings is giving all new players a free shot at $1 million during week one. Just pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Nothing adds to the excitement of watching a game quite like having a free shot at a huge cash prize. Download the DraftKings app now and use code CJR. For a limited time, new players can get a free shot at $1 million during week one. Don't miss out on the action. Enter code CJR to get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes with your first deposit. That's code CJR only at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Back after this with Notre Dame AD Jack Swarbrick next.
Chanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson here. And excited to head out to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to a person I certainly got to know well in my 5 years on Notre Dame's campus, and that has no doubt been one of the biggest voices and most instrumental in a lot of the changes and moving around college football. Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick, kind enough to join us on the Goodyear Hotline now. And Jack, I went back and counted it up. This is now going to be year 14 for you as Notre Dame's Athletic Director. Is that wild for you to hear yet?
It is hard to believe.
It's incredible to think about, and what you've accomplished in that time period we know has been incredible. But for you, how are you feeling after the last year? So many unique challenges going into 2020, really the school year, the athletic calendars with the pandemic. What was it like for you in the athletic department navigating this?
Well, it was an incredible challenge, but it's also Notre Dame at its best. You know, it's so much easier to make those decisions when, you know, you've got a clear sense of mission and values, when you've got great people to work with to do it, and the remarkable students we get to work with. So while it was incredibly taxing, you always felt like we're going to get to the right place. And our decision to play all our sports, our decision to let faculty and staff attend the football games, I think consistently we were able to get to the right place because of the way we approached it.
And, Jack, certainly going to be challenges coming up for this fall. You guys made the decision with football this fall to not require masks or vaccine mandates or a negative COVID test, proof of that, to come and see the stadiums. And there's been a lot of conversation about that decision. How did you guys come to that as the policy for this fall?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to talk about that. So in the first instance on vaccine mandate or negative test, logistically, we just couldn't figure out how to implement it so that it had, you know, you knew you were getting the result that you wanted, that you were able to assess whether somebody was vaccinated. Some of the states that are doing this, some of the schools and states that are doing it, the states have built an app where you download your vaccine and it's matched to your driver's license, and that gives you the opportunity. But to ask our ushers to try and review a slip of paper and match it against a driver's license and then scan your ticket, and it wasn't logistically possible right now. So that was part of it. A big factor, though, too, Mike, is the environment's different. So they're coming to us from restaurants on Friday night or being at a bar or a tailgate before the game. We're operating in an open environment, right? And so we sort of inherit that on the way in, and we sort of had to recognize that in our approach to the stadium. We're encouraging masking. We're doing everything we can to encourage vaccinations. Again, it was the reality of what's our enforcement mechanism? How can we do it? So we're going to go the first 2 weeks this way, see how it goes, judge our experience. We've learned a lot from Major League Baseball, taking a similar approach throughout the summer. And hopefully we'll keep everybody safe.
That is the goal. Chinay Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick. And that will certainly be something to monitor for everyone this fall. But it's really only one of the changes going on around college sports. We had the bombshell over the summer, Oklahoma and Texas announcing that they were going to join the SEC. Jack, were you surprised by this?
I was surprised by the timing. I think a lot of us assumed that Texas would be exploring its options because they refused to grant the assignment of rights to the conference past 24. And so that was a clear signal that they were going to evaluate their options. And so in that sense, we thought something was likely coming. It was earlier than we thought.
Does any of that change how you believe Notre Dame fits into the landscape of conference realignment and potentially joining a conference?
No, it doesn't. Not that standing alone. If it led to additional significant realignment, which I don't believe it will, we would have to take a look at it. But as long as we have a committed media partner who will ensure that our games are available nationally and internationally, and we have access to the college football playoffs, independence is the right approach for us.
And you mentioned the playoff. You were part of a committee that helped review this plan. We saw it get a lot of support this summer, and now we've seen a lot of backtracking. Have you been surprised at the resistance that the college football playoff expansion model has started to receive?
Yes, I am. I mean, we wanted a fulsome discussion, so, and you know, out of that's going to come some resistance. I think, frankly, it's gotten caught up a little bit in the politics following the Texas and Oklahoma decision, and some of that just needs to settle down a little bit. I still believe very strongly that the best alternative is the 12-team model that the working group developed. I think it helps in so many ways, but the bottom line here is that the average student athlete at Notre Dame has about a 24% chance of playing in the postseason in their sport. A football player has a 3% chance of playing in the postseason. We've got to even that out. Football players, they work so hard and they represent the university so well. We need to create more of an opportunity for them to be in the postseason.
And so you ultimately still think we'll get to a point where expansion becomes the move?
I can't imagine that we don't have some form of expansion. I think some people will push for something smaller than 12. I happen to believe, having spent the better part of 2 years studying the models, that there's very little benefit in 8 versus 12. You're much better off with 12. So hopefully we'll wind up there.
Jack Swarbrick with us, Notre Dame Athletic Director on the Goodyear Hotline here on Chinay and Golic Jr. Jack, one of the other things that's come up in a lot of these conversations as we had the alliance announced between the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12, and some other movement in college sports has been this notion that maybe the Power Five would break away. Maybe they would go and form their own way of doing business. Do you believe the NCAA is still a viable organization capable of governing college sports the way it has?
Not in its current form. And there's been a recognition of that by the leadership of the NCAA. They've called a constitutional convention. They're conducting a nationwide survey of their members for ideas about what they should look like going forward. So I think there's a widespread recognition that the NCAA, as we know it, can no longer serve the purpose that was intended, and we have to restructure it or move to something else.
Do you have an opinion of what that should look like as someone who's been in so many of the planning meetings and involved in a lot of these important conversations?
Well, I do. I think there's some cornerstones for me. One is I think enforcement should be separated from the governance. Having an enforcement system that's administered by the members just doesn't work very well. It's fraught with conflicts of interest. So that's an easy one for me. I think there's still a role for the NCAA to play in running championship events, although I also think we should consider doing more of that in conjunction with the national governing bodies. And then finally, it won't come as a surprise to you, since you know us so well, but I think more authority ought to be reside with the schools themselves, and less effort to try and create national standards. The differences are too great among our schools to try and find common national solutions.
National solutions is actually a good segue into one of the last things I wanted to talk with you about here, Jack, and we really appreciate your time today. There's been a big push by a lot of people for national standards when it comes to governing name, image, and likeness rules in college sports. We're only through a couple months of this now. This is all new to this summer, but so far, what has been the Notre Dame experience with the new name, image, and likeness rules, and do you think there should be any more oversight?
Our experience has been great. We're feeling our way. You know, we think we have it figured out, and then a new opportunity comes a student athlete's way, and we have to reconsider some of the approaches we've taken. But we have a great relationship with our student athletes. We're figuring it out, and I love that they have these opportunities. Worth remembering that Father Jenkins 5 years ago in the New York Times advocated for student athletes having name, image, and likeness rights because our other students do. But we do need some baseline national standards. And Mike, the thing I'm most worried about is I think we're moving into a recruiting cycle where, because we don't have some of those common standards, we're going to have a really a bit of a mess, a disruptive recruiting cycle where people are doing things in the name of name, image, and likeness that aren't what we should be doing.
It's certainly a lot of tentacles in this new world of college sports that we're in right now. Jack, for Notre Dame, though, you mentioned the recruiting aspect of things. We've seen that pick up for the Notre Dame football team. We've seen now a pair of college football playoff appearances. In your mind, what does the next step look like for Notre Dame in this program?
We have to win a national championship. That's our standard. That's why we play. That's why all our teams compete here. We try and match the excellence of the university itself by competing for national championships. So I love where we are. Brian has built an extraordinary foundation. This is the best shape the program's been in my 14 years, and I would argue a lot of years before that. And we just got to continue on the path we are. One of only five schools to appear in the CFP more than once. And we've got to build off that and through everything, the way we attract our student athletes, the coaching staff, the resources we provide into it, we have to take the next step.
Jack, incredible stuff as always. Really appreciate you giving us some time today. Best of luck with everything this fall, navigating all of the things that go into another year at South Bend, at Notre Dame's campus. Really appreciate your time today.
Well, I love being with you, and we're really proud of you, Mike, and all you're accomplishing.
Awesome stuff, and greatly appreciate that from Notre Dame AD Jack Swarbrick, kind enough to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll hit into more of who's got the most at stake heading into week one in college football next on ESPN Radio.
Coming up tomorrow on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, Alabama head football coach Nick Saban as the top-ranked Crimson Tide get ready for 14th-ranked Miami this Saturday. Plus, we'll ask him about three of his former Alabama quarterbacks starting in week one of the NFL season. Nick Saban, tomorrow morning with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin at 8:10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News. Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And we're brought to you by Goodyear, with you for every mile on the road to greatness. Goodyear, more driven. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson. We'll get to a little division preview in the NFL. We've been spending so much time on the Patriots. We thought we might as well get to the AFC East and wrap things around that a little bit. But Amber, we're here. Like, starting tonight, week one of college football's weekend begins. UAB versus Jacksonville State, 7:30 Eastern on ESPN tonight. And then we roll right into a weekend where we'll see Boise State and UCF on Thursday. We'll see number 10 North Carolina on Friday. And then we get all of them. I mean all of them. A full slate on Saturday, with the crown jewel being number 3 Clemson against number 5 Georgia. Amber, your Miami Hurricanes also taking on the Alabama Crimson Tide this weekend. Notre Dame's got Florida State on Sunday. As you look out at this landscape, Amber, we know we've still got a 4-team playoff right now, which still means all of this matters a lot. Is there one game that sticks out to you this weekend that you've got circled that's going to have the biggest season impact?
I mean, I'm obviously excited to see the Canes take on Bama. I think it's an interesting matchup because everyone keeps touting De'Aaron King as a potential Heisman contender, and I'm a little surprised by that, just having covered the Hurricanes for as long as I did, because I think that the Canes have some real problems still on offense outside of him, and on defense, maybe in coaching, I don't know. So, I don't know if I believe that they necessarily have to, let's just say, I think it's the line right now is, what, 19 for Bama?
19.5 from our friends at Caesars.
Yeah, so I don't know if Miami can't make that look a little bit ridiculous. Maybe they can kind of hang in there, but I think that's what we'd be hoping for from Miami, is a moral victory, because obviously the chances of them actually beating Bama, I think, are slim to none. So you would then look at the Georgia-Clemson matchup. That's the big one that I think that we all have circled, and I'm just shocked that it's here. Like, I'm shocked that, and by it, I mean all of these matchups. Like, I am shocked that we are here. When did it become September, Mike? When did football actually get here? But I'm here for it.
I mean, if you want to get literal, today.
Well, that's a good point.
That's why
they pay you the big bucks.
Listen, you know what? Every once in a while, observations pay off there. But no, Amber, I'm with you. Shocked that we're actually at this point. And I think you're right. I could actually argue that that game is more important for Bama. Right? Like, Miami, there are people excited about that season, but there's not the yearly expectation of Bama. And a lot of people looking at that team think this is penciled in for a Bama down year, that maybe Bryce Young, despite the NIL money, might not be ready to fill in the big shoes of Tua and Mac Jones.
Yeah, if Miami ends up winning that game by some miracle, if they win that game, that like makes their entire season, right? It's Bama's game to win, and if Bama wins it, we'll just all go ho-hum and then back to business as usual. No one will even think twice about it. So it certainly is UM's game to win, really, there. I mean, it is their – that would make their entire season.
I just think with Alabama, you could send shockwaves across college football. If you go out there and flirt with covering that line, if you go and really put it on him and Bryce Young looks great, it alters the discussion of the entire season, because – quietly, while Georgia and Clemson is going to be awesome and a great
bit
of fun, it's early.
That's the thing with all these matchups when we're talking about them. Like, it is early, you know? They could still both make the college football playoffs.
Very easily, and Clemson's schedule certainly lays out that way. And we know, as long as you don't get blown out, you're going to have a pretty decent shot of sticking around if you are a, 12-1 conference champion with a close loss versus Georgia. Works out pretty well in your favor. Coming up next, though, let's see how it's going to work out in the AFC East this year. No more Cam Newton. Young quarterbacks everywhere. Is this one still belong to the Bills? Next.
Thanks for listening to Chenaan Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.